Chloe joins me on the line now. Chloe, I know you're very busy in preparation for getting yourself ready for the next Olympics. So thanks very much for taking the time to chat with me this morning.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
So I wanted to take you back to your first steps into the world of professional sport because, you know, as we've got here, you've got a finger in almost every pie possible. What was it like stepping into the world of professional sport as a female? I mean, what are the biggest differences that you first saw between the men's and women's codes?
Yeah, so because I've played across a few different ones, I've kind of experienced, I guess, different levels of professionalism. When I first started playing basketball in the WNBL, I was about 18 years old, and I guess it was considered semi-professional, but I was on a small scholarship to Sydney Uni, which was linked with the WNBL club that I was playing with. Then from there, when I moved across to the Rugby Sevens program, that was considered a full-time professional program, but looking at the salaries, comparing between the men's and the women's, they didn't have a collective bargaining agreement in place yet that meant that there was equal minimum pay between the men's and the women's. So a lot of the girls had moved into state and were paying rent and trying to survive off not a lot of cash to do all of those things and still train full-time in preparation for the Olympics. That's since improved, and we've had that collective bargaining agreement introduced, and so there is equal minimum pay there, and then there's also funding that comes through from the Olympic Committee and through the Institute of Sport that means it's performance-based, which for us over the past few years has probably been a good thing because as a women's program we've performed quite well. And then if I look at the AFL women's competition, obviously part-time, so when I was down in Melbourne, had to work as a physio and then also play footy after a full day of work. Mm. And I think that was a pretty big challenge after being a full-time athlete and having to, I guess, deal with the demands of doing a physical job and then rocking up and trying to get the energy to perform and train at my best. I guess comparing between the men's and the women's program, I think that was probably the easiest one for me to compare because we're obviously surrounded by the AFL men's team being at the same club and everything. And I think they're obviously a full-time program that's been around for so many years. And I know for me as a female athlete, I often struggle when I read a lot of comments in social media and things like that of people comparing the women's game to the men's game as if we've been playing for the same number of decades as the men have at this professional level and as if we have a full-time program in place and have access to all of the same facilities and medical treatment and all of these things. So I think there's still a long way to go in that respect before people can start to make these direct comparisons between the men's and the women's league.
Yeah, absolutely. And, to be able to try to train full-time and work at the same time is just, it's beyond me. But I want to move on to media coverage because, as I did mention, you have a podcast and we'll chat a bit about that in a bit. But you know, one of the statistics that your podcast kind of, you know, throws out is the one that I mentioned before. 40% of participants in sport are women, 4% make up sports media coverage. How do you think that the Australian media handles female sport?
Yeah, I think I'd really like to see more of it. I think there's not enough stories about women's sport. I think that there's a demand for it. I know a huge community of people that are incredibly invested in women's sport and even more people who are coming on board. I think looking at the AFLW in particular, the way that they've been able to, I guess, convert a lot of people who weren't necessarily footy fans beforehand but have really embraced this this whole element of women playing football and the way that the AFL have set it up as a really community-type program. Mm. I'd love to see the media looking more into athlete stories. I think, as you're saying, that balance between working and training is so difficult. And there's a lot of really interesting stories. It's not just someone who's come through this pathway and at 18 have received a full-time contract and that's all they've done their whole life. I love the fact that all of these female athletes have had to balance and juggle and learn different things. And I think it contributes a lot to them as people as a whole. I think the teammates that I've played with across a range of sports are just good people, and they're just interesting. They just have so much that they've had to overcome to be able to play these sports at such a high level. And I think there's a real sense of gratitude, I guess, that we have the opportunity to play sport, and it's not something that has been handed to a lot of them either.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, that kind of does lead in nicely to what I wanted to chat about. As I mentioned before, you've got a podcast called The Female Athlete Project. Why did you launch this?
Yeah, there are a couple of big reasons behind this. When I was at rugby, just after Rio, before I headed over to AFLW, I was able to become an ambassador for Our Watch, the organisation that promotes gender equality for the prevention of domestic violence. And initially when I was approached to become an ambassador, I was not sure, I guess, how I felt about taking on that role, because I knew that it was a really sensitive topic, and I wanted to make sure that if I took that on, that I would do a good job of being able to portray the importance of that message. And a big part of the training really stuck with me, and that was the role that sport plays in society. It's such a big part of our culture, particularly in Australia, and the way that sport has the power to change people's attitudes about societal and cultural norms. And I think then looking from that, the role that gender equality plays in preventing domestic violence, that's the biggest driving factor is the gender inequality. And so I kind of took on the weight of that as an athlete, that I'm not just out there playing sport, that I have an ability to use my platform to actually change people's attitudes around the way that women and girls are perceived. So I think that's a really big part of the reason that I started it. And then I guess the other factor is that I love, on my day off, going down to the beach and grabbing a coffee in the paper, and I always flip to the back and try and read stories about women's sport, and I can just never find them, and it drives me mad. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do it myself. If I can't find it here, I'll just do it myself.
Oh, my God. Wow.
That's what I've done, and, I've loved it so far.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll make sure that we pop all the links and everything up so that you can catch that hard work that you've been doing. Chloe, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me this morning.
Thanks so much, Alex.